Ooh, nice cork pop.
What a great way to start a podcast. All right, we are sipping on the wood. You introduce this. I'm literally just reading the label. You're the bourbon
This is
expert.
The Maker's Mark Heart Release from last year.
Wait. That was not as satisfying.
I was afraid you were going to spill it. This is probably the best product Maker's Mark has put out in a long time, other than their cask strength 46. And allegedly the initial cellar aged release, which I've not had, but this is some good stuff.
And for the warm up lap, since we're warming up inside with a bourbon, crazy, a couple crazy auction results lately, not everything. There's always outliers, but one in particular, which surprised me, especially since I made a video recently that said that NA2 NSXs were probably overpriced and or NA1s were underpriced or undervalued. And apparently nobody listened to me because an NA2 NSX 2002 gray on grayish, 9,000 miles, NA2 NSXT, 6-speed manual, of course, with a Comtec supercharger. I think I said that already. I'm sorry. Silverstone metallic over silver interior.
Yeah, get it right.
Fancy on, name Doug. For gray. Anyway, it sold for $370,000.
What? Your shit or get off the pot dreams are fading, Doug.
I know.
These things are going to be so expensive.
I know. Well, it's only the NA2s, it seems like. And if you look at the Bring a Trailer value graph, sale graph, it literally looks like a hockey stick, which a friend of mine who's a financial wizard said a couple years ago, if things look like a hockey stick, then they will revert back. Like, you can't keep that graph up forever in any market. So,
or if it's vertical, you're out for now. Like, everybody else, the hype machine is in. Like, you don't want to be in. For correct. That same reason. So
correct.
So are you sure you still want to focus on potentially an NSX?
Yes. I like the NA1s better.
I got to be honest. The pop-ups, I think, if, I don't know. Not really the warm-up lap topic, but like, what is the difference other than the visual differences? Is there like a performance difference?
Yes.
Is there?
The biggest difference is the second gen is a 3.2 six-speed manual versus a 3-liter 5-speed manual.
The suspension
also is a little bit softer, in my opinion. They have bigger wheels, which actually helps balance out the handling a little bit. That was a big deal between the first gen, second gen, AP1 and AP2 S2000. If you put the second gen wheels on the first gen, it like they got way less twitchy.
Interesting.
Anyway, we're going down a rabbit trail. Another auction that disappointed me. I've been looking for a car for my UK road trip. I thought I saw a Viper GTS on collectingcars.com.
Nice.
I thought, well, man, what better than to have an American in this, you know, Trump tariff economy. I'm going to roll around Scotland in a bright red with white stripe Viper and then bring it back to America and make a profit. I was wrong. It sold for 85,000 British pounds sterling, which is over $100,000 because the exchange rate is going massively against my favor for our upcoming trip.
Yes.
And in the U.S., one would sell for, with those miles, around 75 grand.
Oh, my gosh. Yep, out.
Out on that one. On that one. Speaking of upcoming vehicular challenges, Ethan, our producer, have you picked a wedding car yet? Are you in for the Figaro?
Figgy. We have not definitively settled on a wedding car yet.
You could have figs at your wedding as well. And, like, have I don't do a
also,
joke with that.
Let's be real. You're not settling for figgy.
Figgy pudding?
what are they, from a Pink Floyd song?
This is good. This is good. I like this idea. You know how they do like the wedding favors and all that?
Yeah.
We could just put like a fig in a bag.
Yes.
Yeah. Nobody's going like, to get it.
Candy and stuff in a bag. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to settle for the
Figaro.
You guys
would get it.
Let's be honest. That would be an honorable choice.
No, we'll keep the viewers, listeners, whoever, in suspense here. I forgot this is the warm-up lap.
Keep them in suspense and keep them in suspenders.
That's
whoo.
All right.
Hey, topic one.
If you want more of this exclusive content, we are introducing a Patreon channel for next season. And what that gets you, we're going to do a little bit different recording format. People wanted the live, and we will have live back only for the Patreon subscribers. We'll also do Q&A and just exclusive banter in between segments during the recording with our Patreon subscribers that are there with us. So we attempted to set it up and immediately got removed for suspicious activity, which tracks pretty much everything we do here.
Can't trust this cannonball
guy. At least a little bit suspicious.
Yes, very, very dubious here.
Can't trust this guy as far as he can drive in
exactly
a really fat, short amount of time. I don't know.
But we think the link will be patreon.com/switchcast. That's what it was as of earlier today.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
We'll see about
check
that.
Check the show notes.
Yes, hopefully. It'll be back up by the time you hear this, and it will be affordable, maybe not worth the value, but we hope you will come anyway. And
boy, you're really selling it, Doc.
Well, maybe we should charge more because things are worth what you pay for, right?
Well, they say good advice is worth nothing and it's worth the price. Ever hear that?
And topic one, Doc.
Okay. Jamie Clark sent us this story. Thank you very much. Traffic laws. Here's a really dumb one that won't do anything. Spoiler alert. We're just summarize it right there. Florida is proposing, lawmakers there are proposing, requiring two license plates. That's not two different ones, which you might see on an Altima or a Challenger, you know, or like a James Bond car, but one on the front and one on the rear. Ohio people became free from this type of tyranny. What was it? Is it 8-10 years ago now? I feel like it was a long time ago.
Actually,
but we fought that for a long time, and it took lawmakers numerous attempts to go back to just a rear license plate in Ohio. Now, interestingly enough, the registration fees did not go down.
Yeah,
no, they just now charge you extra if you want a second plate.
It was in like 2019, I think.
Okay.
That we got rid of it.
All right. 6 years. I never ran a front plate anyway, so really didn't affect me other than, you know, maybe getting a ticket in North Olmsted because they like to enforce it. Anyway, Tallahassee, Florida, and this is courtesy of WTSP 10 out of Tampa Bay. Under a new proposal filed in the Florida Senate, drivers would be legally required to have license plate on the front and rear sides of vehicles. Boy, didn't proofread that one.
I mean, I think they are technically a side of the vehicle, but that's not what we would consider the side.
Right, right.
Yikes.
Let's see. So, like any law that we've discussed before that we don't particularly agree with, this one is somewhat in response to a person who was killed after a hit and run. Now, again, these are tragic circumstances. We don't want to make light of that. However, as we've discussed before, we don't think that one tragic situation should necessarily be justification for a law that affects everybody. Because a lot of times it's just because, well, people have pull, they bug their congressman enough, whatever. We've covered that before. But State Senator Joe Gruters submitted the idea. He's a Republican. I thought Republicans were about less government, but whatever. In an amendment to the bill's first version, which would require that auto repair shops keep records of repairs to cars damaged in crashes. That's an interesting side topic there. The legislation is called the Lily Glaubuck Act, named after the 13-year-old girl who died after a 2022 hit and run. They say that implementing these rules would give law enforcement more resources at their disposal when trying to identify drivers who are involved in crashes and flee the scene. Adding a license plate to the front and back of cars, well, I think they're already on the back of cars, unless it's
an
Altima,
yeah,
would make it easier to spot a suspected vehicle. And he says, quote, as people are speeding away from these scenes, there's a lot of cameras out there, and those cameras can't always see the back of the plate. I'll point them in the other direction.
Or what if it's at night? You can't see the front plate anyway. If anyway, you'd see the back plate.
Right, because the headlights are blinding.
Yep.
Yeah.
doesn't it feel slightly, this isn't the topic, it feels slightly disingenuous or something. Like, when we read about these and I look at this article and the first thing up is a picture of this poor young girl who was killed and everything. Like, obviously, like you said, these are horrible scenarios, but like, feels a little icky sometimes that this is potentially being used to win people over for the sake of legislation that sure. I personally don't believe will have the effect that they're purporting it will. Maybe that's why I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah. I think laws should be made from like a preponderance of evidence, right? I think they should be statistically driven, not emotionally driven. There's definitely valid responses to these types of tragedies, but how about, I don't know. I mean, obviously you can't punish the person if you can't catch them, but maybe more strict punishments for people who do these hit and runs, right?
For
like,
sure.
Are they getting charged with murder or are they getting like 5 years, the same as somebody who has a DUI and didn't even crash or something like that, right?
Well, I saw, oh goodness, I'll need to, so there was, I was doing some research for this and I found a thread on Grassroots Motorsports from 2019 and somebody indicated that, you know, in their town or whatever, they'll get a $300 ticket if they can't, if they like pass a bus when it has its stoplights up, when they're trying sure. to pick up a kid.
Yeah. Okay.
And, why is it only $300? Like if you do so, that could really significantly potentially kill somebody who's not paying attention. Their young child.
Sure.
Like, okay, $300 is like a slap on the wrist.
That's a pretty hefty ticket though. I mean, I will say in the grand scheme of things, that's a pretty heavy ticket.
If it's an accident, I guess, but I don't know if it teaches a lesson.
Yeah. And I think this is an entirely separate topic, which we will cover is the slap on the wrist for doing something that's really maybe dangerous versus the jail time that you get if you do the exact same thing and somebody's hurt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's a big can of worms that will open later. But back to the original topic. Are having a front license plate going to prevent this type of thing? And do they have data? Oh, Tyler, you did a bunch of digging. Could you find any data that would say, man, front plates reduced accidents, put more criminals in jail? Anything?
Doug, this was very frustrating. I tried and didn't find anything. I wanted studies. I wanted some sort of really analytical look at this. And I only found the same talking points from both sides of the issue. It was, this is better for surveillance and camera images, or it's better for eyewitness accounts. It gives you probable cause to pull somebody over if it's a two-state law, but you're missing a front plate.
I don't like the whole probable cause. It's like tint. It's like saying tint is probable cause.
Yes.
I have tint because I don't like to overwork my AC systems. And I'm such a big celebrity, I don't want people to see me driving down the road.
Future so bright you need some tint. But a lot of these are related to revenue too, which is a little icky again when it comes to why you'd be for it. I have to be honest, as a car guy, I don't like the front plates because I don't like how they look. Do I think it makes a significant difference in being able to catch somebody? I don't really believe that, but that's a feeling. I wanted data because if data could tell me I'm wrong, I could change my mind.
I don't think Ohio had the data either, because their only reason, the push to keep the front plate law, every time the lawmakers tried to do away with it, was this one state trooper or cop, I don't remember which it was, but it was a law enforcement officer who was killed by a guy who was driving at him. And they're like, well, but if the guy had a front plate, then the cop could have radioed it in and they would have caught him. Maybe that is true, but that one extreme instance is not a reason to make every law-abiding citizen put a front plate on their car, right? And this is interesting too, because as we're preparing for this discussion, there's a post by the Geauga County Sheriff's Office. On Friday, April 4th, the driver fled from deputies on SR 608 near Walking Stick in Hamden. We are currently searching for the owner of this vehicle and any information that could help us identify this driver. If you recognize this vehicle or have any information, please contact us. And there is two somewhat distorted photos from a traffic camera, I guess, of the front and side. I'm sorry, the front side the front and the side side.
Okay. Oh,
of this
side
BMW.
Side. Nice.
Which people were like, oh, how are we supposed to identify that? But I'm looking at going, any car person could. That's like a 2008 to 12 BMW 335i Coupe. It's got tinted windows. It has a blacked out grill, kidney grills instead of the silver ones. They look to be stock wheels, but they're like the 19s. I'm like, any car
probably
guy knows
low
exactly
on
who this is.
Blinker fluid. Yeah, yeah.
But guess what it did not have?
Oh, it didn't have a front plate.
Didn't have a front plate. So somebody snarkily said, oh, if only Ohio had a two-plate law for vehicles. And so, you know, I, of course, had to respond to this. And I was like, yeah, if only they had a tint law, which Ohio does. And this vehicle definitely has dark-tinted windows. And they said, well, it doesn't matter. Even if you didn't have tint, you couldn't identify the driver. I'm like, you totally missed my point.
Yeah.
The point is, criminals that run from the cops are not particularly inclined to also be obeying tint laws and front plate yeah. laws, let alone plate laws at all, right? So here's like all the reasons, in my opinion, why front plate laws won't do jack squat. One, the car is likely stolen. That's why they're running. In fact, in prepping for this podcast, I watched yet another police chase where a stolen BMW rammed multiple vehicles while fleeing. And when they finally wrecked out, four to five apparent juveniles ditched the car and all ran in different directions. We need front plate law for that one. No, it's a bunch of John Does and it was a stolen car. So the only thing you'd find is the registered owner of the car, not the criminal. Okay. Car is likely stolen. Flock cameras can easily get rear plates. They're positioned all over most cities now, and they face both directions. So you can get rear plates. If a criminal is doing criminal things, they likely have fictitious tags already, so the plates won't even come back to the car. Other scenarios, dealer tags only go on the rear. Temp tags only go on the rear. People from out of state, people from cars from out of state. I mean, there's a bajillion reasons why cars legitimately wouldn't have front plates anyway. If you don't catch them, like let's say you get the plate, but you don't actually catch them, you don't know who is driving at the time. So you can only find the registered owner and then what?
Yeah.
Right?
Then you would have to prove that they were doing something potentially. I don't know how all that works. I'm not an expert. It's not.
Your car ran from the cops.
Yeah. It's like, cool. Who?
Wasn't me.
Yeah.
Prove it. Yeah. And the big overarching point, which I've somewhat already made, but to bring it back full circle, is if criminals are going to break one law, why in the world would they bother adhering to the letter of another law? Cops will tell you all the time, they pull people over for, like you said, the probable cause, the tint, the busted taillight, et cetera, and then they find drug trafficking. So it goes hand in hand that criminals tend to break more than one law when they're breaking the law.
And it's, and in those scenarios, you know, yes, it is, you know, a positive thing that the officer was able to pull that person over, but that also on the other side of that coin, it's not a perfect system, gives reasons for officers to potentially like end up harassing on purpose or not people who are just living their lives.
It makes criminals out of law-abiding citizens.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it.
That's been said about a whole lot of other laws. I think that applies here. I don't think anyone's life is going to be saved by this law. And it seems like that's the impetus for this law, right?
Well, and that's what upset me about trying to find data, because I was open to having my mind change. I was open to putting a plate on the front of my 911 and in the tow hook just because like it's actually better. But I didn't find anything. I didn't find anything in either direction. So, like, obviously, this isn't based on statistics.
No. Lawmakers need to do things to please their constituents. And so this is an act where they're saying, yeah, we're definitely, we're doing something for you. Speaking of license plates.
Ew.
I wonder if all these, yes, all of these photos on our license plate game are from the rear of the vehicle. Would you look at that?
I think all mine are too.
Yeah, so it is the plate to sample game where we read off a vanity plate and the other person has to guess what car it's on. See how good we are at identifying the stereotype of the owner. I've got five. You've got five.
I've got five.
All right, locked I'll start. In. I feel like a few of these should be layups for you. Okay, this one. Doors up.
Model what Y is the SUV? Tesla Model Y?
You know, is it a DeLorean? I don't think I didn't do a Tesla this week. Didn't do an EV for you. I'm sorry.
So is it a DeLorean, an SLS?
Yes.
Ah, there it is.
Mercedes SLS.
Whew.
I'm amazed that you went all going on that. It could have been a Lambo.
I feel like it could have been, but when I heard that, I just immediately thought like up to me means like actually going away from you, not like forward. Like I think a Lambo door is forward
sure.
and
scissor
up.
Doors.
Yeah.
So Lambo, you get scissor on your license plate.
Yeah. Which, the first plate for you is license plate LCN PL8.
That's got to be on an Altima because they're trying to break the law and not get called in.
No, but I don't think you're terribly far off. It is a commuter car.
Okay, what is it?
It is a Mazda CX-5.
That's what's in our garage right now. It's a service loaner. I can't stand it. Okay, here's one for you. Porsche. Porsche. P-O-R-C-H-I-A. Porsche.
944.
No.
996.
No.
Ah. Panamera.
No.
What is it?
Chevrolet Equinox.
I got the way you said it at first got me on the wrong track because I thought it was one of the Porsche plates when people put like P-O-O-R, which is a 944 or a 996 or, you know, the
I
cheaper.
I intentionally misled you.
So rude. Next for you. You be nice.
A Subaru?
No, but I like where your head's at.
Hyundai?
No, other direction. It's a BMW 528, like a new one.
Oh.
So I didn't...
They're asking other people to be nice, even though they're probably not stereotypically. 100%.
Yes.
Yeah, you be nice to me, because even if I don't turn
signal. I'm going
to
be up your bum on the highway, flashing my lights at you.
All right, here's one for you. O-T-O.
O-T-O. What? What could that possibly... But Mercedes-Benz SUV.
No.
Ah, okay.
Ferrari 612 Scaglietti 121.
Oh.
That was a nerd one for you.
Oh, what is the 121?
I think it's just a one of one spec. Like it's a special order specification package, whatever. Appearance
I
package.
See.
It might have the HETE package as well. Yeah.
Whew. Next
it's
up
not
for you.
One of one. That would be a Corvette. Because lot more than one 121 612. But it's the 1-to-1 edition.
Huge car is the next one for you.
Tesla Model Y?
No.
That is giant.
No.
Lincoln Continental.
Other way.
Other way?
Other way.
Mazda Miata.
Ooh, close. A slammed Mini Cooper.
Ooh. With, all right.
Like, somebody's having irony. A good time.
Okay.
A little bit of the Stance Nash wheels.
Here's one for you that you won't get.
I'm sorry. OTO was, I'm this embarrassed.
HEIC thing is screwing me up. I can't. All right. We're going to come back to that one. GT4-ish.
Is this a, like a Cayman S?
Nope.
GT4-ish. Is it something similar to a Ferrari GTC? Oh, that's a GTC4. Is it like a, I don't know. Does it have like a GT4 race car variant? Like, is it a Hyundai or something?
Mazda Miata with a big wing.
But Miatas don't race in GT. Sorry, I'm not going to nerd out too much on that, but I don't think a Miata, there's a
like
Miata
the
cup.
Sense of, it's like the same sense of humor as the huge car.
Huge car. I do like it. Next for you, poor B4, or not, I don't know why I did this. It's four.
Ah, Mercedes. Got to be a Mercedes.
Very close, but it's not.
BMW.
Also, even closer, I think.
Is it like a base model Porsche SUV?
No, it's a Range Rover.
Oh, okay. I'll give them that. Kind of makes sense. That's a good flex. But is it like a 10-year-old Range Rover, a little rusty?
No, it's not that bad. It's like a relatively new one.
All right. They will be poor again, though, if they have a Range Rover.
Yes. As soon as the maintenance bills come a-knocking.
Okay. SCFLAW, scofflaw.
Scofflaw. Oh, this is one of you cannonballer folk, isn't it? One of you, it's not Gonzo Prius's Prius. I don't know any other cannonball cars. It's not on the Fraud Taurus or the silver passenger car. Is it on the van? The one that somebody built, didn't Jared Pink build the van?
It's not. It's on a Subaru Outback.
Okay. Is it all at all related to Cannonball?
Yes, he's the producer of the Cannonballer documentary.
Oh.
But I knew that plate would throw you off because you'd never expect that on a Subaru Outback.
Wait, the one that I rode in? I think he took me back to the house when we were in Kentucky. I was in that car.
Son of a bitch. Yes.
Last one for you, Doug. PLANTRS.
It is the Mr. Peanut Mobile.
Dang it. Yes, it is. That 100%. Nutmobile.
The Nutmobile. I was getting confused in my head between the nut and the wiener. I couldn't. The mobile, the wiener mobile. Yeah.
Whoo! Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
In car dealer news this week, a man was arrested in Massachusetts for running an alleged fraud at his used car dealer. Now, many of you listeners and viewers will say, well, that's every car dealer. The whole system is a fraud.
Especially this guy, am I right?
Doc fees should be criminal!
Hank? Where are you?
Okay, this article from turntoten.com, WJAR, Bristol County prosecutor said Friday that the owner of a Swansea used car dealership was arraigned on dozens of fraud charges. The DA's office said 46-year-old Edward Sisiu of Attleboro appeared in court. He was arraigned on 43 counts of larceny under $1,200 by false pretenses, 2 counts of larceny by check over $1,200, 37 counts of forging or misusing a registry of motor vehicles document, 38 counts of failing to deliver title upon a motor vehicle transfer, and 5 counts of larceny of a motor vehicle. Larceny, for those of you who don't know, is theft. Easy Google there, but you know. Fancy words here in this article.
I had actually kind of forgotten because there's a bourbon that's called larceny, and that's the first thing that comes into my brain when I think of it. And I was like, well, this doesn't sound right.
I mean, sometimes we think of it as, I don't know, it's just roped into all these other crimes, like cannonballing. No, it's theft. So essentially was charged with theft of a motor vehicle via these dubious transactions. And I do want to note, Steve Lato, one of my favorite channels, did cover this today, and I in no means am trying to ride on his coattails. He's an attorney. We're in the car world more. He is a car guy, but after listening to his take on it, I think there was a lot of things that were not covered that I think are very helpful in bringing clarity to this, and just a different perspective. So again, not trying to just capitalize on his video, but I think there's some important things that he missed that we can add to this. So prosecutor said Sisiu would take out loans to buy cars at auction to sell at his dealership, Bristol County Auto Exchange. He'd sell the cars, but he wouldn't pay off the loans. He's also accused of providing fake temporary license plates to the purchaser of the cars and failing to follow through with registrations and titles. So there's a few important things here. One, taking out loans to buy cars at auction, right? So most auctions have their own floor plan that you can set up and get approved for as a dealer. And this is sometimes why when you go on Manheim or you look at auction results, the sales, the transactions will be oddly high relative to the regular market. And it's because these dealers need inventory. This is their only way to buy it because they don't have the cash to buy it from private parties or via other means. So they go in there, they're bidding up against everybody else who has to stock their lot. And so they pay, in my opinion, too much for their cars because they have this financing, right? So it's not like the money is coming out of their pocket. They just put it on the tab at the auction, pay ridiculous interest rates. How some of these dealers make money doing this, I have no idea, but this is how it works.
Well, and it's interesting that that is a separate market almost with different supply and demand constraints that just drive up that particular price. Now, I do have questions about how they stay in business, but
They got to turn them. A lot of times it's just very small margins and they make it up with selling warranties, selling finance contracts, et cetera, et cetera. Or they get a trade-in off that vehicle. Again, you can't be a car dealer if you don't have anything on your shelves to sell. So when dealers are short on supply, they get desperate. They bid stuff up at auction. So put it on the auction floor plan. The floor plan is a very constraining and expensive version of financing inventory. It's typically around, I'd say, double bank rate. I'd say its effective rate is probably 10 to 12% right now, maybe more. And they have curtailment periods. So you got to pay down 30, 60, 90 days, and it might be 120 days. You have to pay the car off in full. So if you don't sell it, you've got to come up with the cash. And if you're running a cash strap dealer already, that can really put a hurting on you, especially if you have to lose money on the car to sell it. So anyway, he'd sell the cars, fail to pay off the loans. He would also provide fake temporary license plates to the purchasers of the cars. This is important. He's in Massachusetts. Temporary plates are illegal in Massachusetts. Massachusetts does not issue them. Massachusetts dealers do not issue them. They're not allowed to. When I sell cars to people in Massachusetts, we put them on because Ohio issues them. But a lot of times the customers will say, don't put one on. I can't have them. Cops don't recognize them. I will get pulled over and fined or whatever because they're not legal in Massachusetts.
So what do you do?
Nothing.
Oh, do you just drive the car and like have your bill of sale if you need to get it to it?
Yes, but here's the other thing. And I've pushed back against this a couple times, right? So somebody in Massachusetts can correct me, but this comes directly from an insurance agent slash title service company in Massachusetts. They cannot issue insurance, and I believe this is state law as well. They cannot issue insurance on a car in Massachusetts until it is titled and registered in Massachusetts.
Okay.
So as a dealer, we provide people temporary tags because there's a delay in getting them their title. That's normal. We're not a fraud because of that. People who are frauds, also there's a delay. It's just a lot longer delay. Yeah. Anyway, but the people in Massachusetts are like, oh, I can't drive my car. I need the title right away because I need that so I can get plates so that I can get insurance. So like the plates and insurance go together. You can't just call your insurance agent when you're at the dealer and say, I'm walking away with a car. Yeah, it's fairly complex in Massachusetts. So that all factors in. Based on the reviews that I found for this dealership, he was issuing New Jersey temporary tags. Should have been a red flag for people.
Was anybody like, this isn't right? I will admit, trying to figure out how to do this in Ohio sometimes has been a little strange, and it's one of the more straightforward states. You'd think you'd know, like, hey, I just can't have these.
Yeah, well, 47 victims lost a total of $325,000 in change. So Sisyu is now out on bail, or he was held on $100,000 cash bail. He was already on probation during this alleged fraud. So apparently not his first rodeo. And it's interesting, and I should have looked into this, that he had a dealer's license when he was on probation. Ohio has pretty strict laws about who can get a dealer's license or a salesperson's license, and you have to do a criminal background check. And if you have previous convictions for stuff, felony convictions, you cannot hold a dealer license or a salesperson's license. Although, side note, Ohio just did away with dealer salesperson's licenses. You no longer have to be licensed to be a car salesman. So I guess you could be a felon and go sell cars.
You just can't own a dealership.
Can't own a dealership. Gotcha. Right. A couple of reviews from Bristol County Auto Exchange. They have the 2.6 stars on nice. Google, which Heck is actually yeah. not too far off of Atlanta Fine Cars, which is not allegedly, or they are not running a fraud. They're just selling allegedly bad cars. They're at 3.3. Let's see. Where's this one? Despicable business practice. Me and my 17-year-old son went there and purchased a vehicle. It was my son's first car in his life savings, $5,500. Picked it up on a Thursday, brought it to our mechanic to have it inspected on Friday. Got the order of operations wrong
you
there.
Do that first.
It wouldn't pass due to severe rot on both rockers, rot on unibody above right rear subframe mount, hole in muffler inlet pipe, body item dangerously damaged, holes or leaking joints in the exhaust system. So they brought the car back on Friday morning, wanted their money back. So the dealer wrote them a check and it bounced for non-sufficient funds.
Yikes.
These enterprising people went right to the bank the next day, and there was enough money at that point, so the bank cashed it for them, so they got their money back. But then the dealer put it back up online for sale, so this guy has no scruples. No scruples. He's a professional swindler is another review here. Owner is a liar and a crook. He said he had the transmission fixed in the truck he sold my husband, and it never happened. This guy sounds like Harry Wormwood, if any of you are Roald Dahl fans.
Who?
Matilda?
Who is that?
Matilda? If you've seen the movie, it's okay. It's nowhere near as good as the book.
I feel like maybe I have. Goodness. This is going to be everybody dunk on Tyler for being uncultured, I think.
Another review. Purchased a Saab. Well, that's... Sounds like this
that
would be
sounds
a sob
like a
story.
Good, okay. All right. My face looks like this dude's lawyer from this this article here. Just has like the most dead look on his face, like slightly cocked, like he couldn't be bothered. Hates his life.
Oh, man. Another one, life savings. I bought a car in June and gave Eddie my life savings for it. I was told that he would have my plates in a week, and for now, he put temporary plates from New Jersey on my car. After numerous calls about my plates and titles, just one lie after another, they'll be there soon, whatever. Temporary plates expired 4 times, and when I drove there, he was closed and nowhere to be found. Won't return calls or texts. So I'm out all that money, and the car is sitting in my yard because I can't drive it without the title.
So I always wonder, when we talk about things like this, does this guy just screw everybody over, or is it like he picks and chooses and does some deals on the up and up? Because like, how do you stay? Obviously, you don't stay in business very well. But like, how long did you think this is going to go on if you're just screwing over everybody?
A lot of professional criminals or unscrupulous people do have their people that they take care of, and they will never screw over. I think it was Clay Tom that I heard this about, which was CNC Exotics, massive exotic car dealer fraud, is he had a few people that he knew just like he'll never screw them over. And I've heard this about other people as well. Maybe it was Bobby Kahn. But anyway, they'd have their really great clients, their big money guys, that they're like, nope, I will always make sure they get their titles, their cars are good, and everybody else will screw over. So, yeah, there are some people that play favorites. And apparently George B. got a good vehicle. One of the best experiences I ever had buying a used vehicle. And a rare one at that.
Oh, was it a Corvette?
No, it was a GMC Acadia Denali. Probably George B. probably also has a Corvette.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Speaking of Corvettes.
Yes, you could buy popular demand. Hank is back in the studio today. You know, he's been gone for a minute. Thankfully, this is still before his bedtime as we're recording. Definitely didn't drive his Corvette today, though. Weather sucks. It's like 40 degrees and rainy here in Ohio. So we have a hilarious interaction that somebody sent into the show of trying to, you know, inquire about a Corvette. There's lots of typos. We're going to do our best. Hank didn't bring his reading glasses, so we'll see how it goes. So yeah, we're gonna reenact this for you. So it starts out saying, "Hi, where is this car located?"
Every and all service record from a certified dealer. Okay, your strokes, LOL. Okay, lots of them. It a wow.
Dude, I have no idea what you're saying, LOL.
I've had so many hits, oh, thus car, a lots of blah, 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 TK, it's what I'm saying. Very tired of PP pills. Pullers.
Okay, well, good luck to you, man. I can't commit with you, so good luck.
Strock away. LOL. I guess you don't have $68,900. Sorry to hear that. Wee. You're the one that asked me where the car was. It's in China. Stop wasting people's times. Find something else to do with you.
Bro, are you high or drunk?
LOL. No, not at all. You're the one that reached out to me. Read your messages. That's why I'm responding the way I am. Do you know how many strokes I've talked to in the last 2 weeks? I'm burned out. Stop wasting people's time. Why did you care about where the car was located?
I think when you're buying a car, it matters where it's located. You have to factor in going to see it and then getting it shipped or driving it back. Also, WTF does strokes mean? Learn to talk, dude. Good luck with your sale, dude. Proofread what you write or go back to school.
I think you really should look at the correspondence that we had. Obviously, you don't know what you're doing. I gave you all the facts. All you did is say, I don't know what you're saying. I think you knew how to read and comprehend. Good luck in your search. This is too much car for you, obviously. Goodbye.
Clean Carfax, title in hand, showpiece condition.
Here is what it's called, the time waster. Sorry, read the correspondence. I know exactly what I'm doing.
WTF is peace condition.
LOL, play on a spell check from voice text. That'll get you far.
This car is meant full documentation since birth. That sentence makes no sense. All your other ones are just talking about strokes and pee-pee pills. My thing works fine, dude. I don't need pills to get it up.
LOL, you're funny. I'm just having fun with you, LOL.
Good luck, dude. I'm trying to help you out. Just proofread and don't call people strokes if you want to sell this car. No one was going to buy it with that kind of messaging, LOL. Voice to text shouldn't misspell having to having with an E. My phone wouldn't even let me type that. Learn to spell. Learn to communicate. Good luck. Good night.
Good you never responded. I was wasting my time giving your facts. That's why I called you a stroke like a lot of other people are wishing. Poor Andrew. Just a heads up. I took the time to respond to you and I was busy out on the golf on my yacht. The wind affects voice texting. Sorry, have a nice evening. I will see you're not a car guy if you don't know what a nice piece is.
Bro, you are unhinged.
LOL, yes, with you, LOL, LOL. Check in the morning, we can all banter some more. Do you want to come by the car? What town are you in?
The poetic asking for the location as the last message is so good. Oh, I love it.
It all comes full circle.
This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast.
While we're waiting for him, you want to hear a joke, Tyler?
100%. Let's go.
So
I'd like to hear it too.
This is a Norm MacDonald joke. I'll try to do it justice. I got this uncle. He lives up in Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a crazy man. He was coming down to visit me. And he flew into Hopkins, and he gets in a cab, and he goes, take me to Mayfield. I can't do a French accent, but you know.
He's like, oui, oui. What?
Baguette, croissant.
Like, take me to
Surrender.
Mayfield, visit my nephew. And the cabbie's like, yeah, sure, we'll be right there in, 15 minutes. In the meantime, you want to hear a joke? I tell all my passengers a joke. And I tell all my passengers a riddle. And my uncle goes, oh, yeah, I love a riddle. And he goes, all right, well, here's one for you. Brothers and sisters, I have none. But this man's father is my father's son. My uncle goes, who is it? He goes, it's me. My uncle thinks about it. He goes, oh, that's a great riddle. Take me back. I need to go to Quebec and tell my wife. So he's like, what? You just got here. And he's like, no, take me back. Forget Cleveland. I want to go tell my wife the joke. So he's like, all right, whatever. So he takes him back to Hopkins. He gets the first flight back to Quebec. And he gets off the plane. He, I'm storming into his house. He goes, I have a wife. I forget, my aunt. he calls her wife. He goes, wife, I have a riddle for you. Brothers and sisters, I have none. But this man's father is my father's son. My aunt goes, I don't know. Who is it? Some cab driver back in Cleveland.
Couldn't resist covering this topic. Every automotive magazine on the planet has covered it, but we're going to cover it differently.
Yeah, we are, because we're different on Switchcast.
With more snark poured on it. Speaking of pouring on, about a year ago, a fire chief in Piscataway, New Jersey, fire chief of a volunteer firehouse, worth noting. That'll come into play later.
Does he just volunteer himself to be chief then? Is it all just...
I'm guessing the chief actually gets paid, but...
Okay.
Let's see. He was seen on video vandalizing a vehicle parked beside the firehouse as a result of an ongoing dispute with a man who owns a neighboring building. This is courtesy of firehouse.com. And the chief, Joshua Skolnick, was charged with third-degree criminal mischief and ordered to pay approximately $8,000 in restitution. However, the vehicle on which he poured this bucket of debris, some of the articles said bucket of rocks, which made me think like, oh gosh, this is a real vandalization. But when you watch the video, I think that's over-dramatizing it.
I think the first bucket probably had some rocks in it, but the subsequent ones were more just kind of debris, detritus, whatever you want to like.
I only saw one bucket pour in the video I
watched.
Oh,
there's like three or four. There's a lot. He like keeps coming back for more and like...
Okay. All right. Well, that changes things somewhat. But according to the articles, the only damage that was done was a dent in the door and a cracked rear window.
Which makes sense. The first bucket was just like square on the rear window. Dude had him. He was on a mission.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I would say this probably didn't just come out of nowhere, right? They said there's a property drainage dispute between the business and the firehouse, probably ongoing. I've had property disputes with my neighbors over sometimes almost nothing that turned into big things. For example, I forgot to close the gate on a neighboring company's lot, and that started essentially World War III between us, which made no sense because the gate did not have a real latch. It was a fake chain and latch that you literally just like draped over it, and it just kept like the wind from blowing it open. But you could walk around it, or anyone could walk up to it and just like lift it up and open the gate and get in. So he was concerned because he goes, "Oh, what if somebody stole our trucks?" I'm like, "The gate is not stopping anything. Like, I'm very sorry that I forgot to close it, but it literally is just a formality."
Yeah, like if somebody really wanted those, they could just walk in.
So anyway, no apology got us anywhere there. So I can understand how this stuff can escalate with unreasonable people here. I don't think this was the right response, but I could see if you're getting a bunch of crap draining on your property and your neighbor is not dealing with it, that you just take that crap that came from their property and put it back on their property. I can understand the ire here. It's 12-year-old response, but I understand the desire at the very least. It gets more interesting. The Arbor Hose Company chief poured a bucket full of rocks, gravel, mud, and dirt and grass on Bonna's rare sports car on Saturday evening. Now, it is a rare sports car. It's one of 30 Nismo edition Nissan 270Rs.
Oh, so cool.
Yes.
Love these.
JDM, so they were never imported or made for the U.S. market, but now that they're more than 25 years old, you can get them here. But it didn't end there. Victim here, Mark Bonna, who owns a business selling these types of cars, has sued Joshua Skolnick now for $500,000.
Is that how much these go for?
No.
Okay. Is it close?
No.
Oh.
It's about 5x any transactions we could find.
Oh.
So they ranged from like $75,000 to $125,000 for the auction results that we could find. Granted, there's only 30 of them total, but this is wildly overpriced in my opinion. I could understand saying, well, $500,000 is... I want punitive damages, but typically punitive is not in the original claim. It's a multiple of the actual compensatory damages. And I could understand like pain and suffering. I don't know. But Bonna's claim is that he had a deal for this car in place and the deal fell through as a result of this vandalization. And apparently the deal was for $500,000, which I don't buy.
That seems a bit of a reach.
He then also said that, well, it has to be totally restored and the car is only original once, right? The requiring of a complete restoration has tanked its market value according to driving.ca, which was based on the cars being all original. This is one of those scenarios where I would love to be an expert witness. And even being a car guy, I would want to be an expert witness for the defendant in this case. Now, I don't condone what this fire chief did. I honestly think he should be fired for this. Like, as a chief, like, you're in a position of leadership.
Like, this is just highly irresponsible behavior. This isn't about making any sort of move to resolve the situation. It's just to take out your anger on someone else, which I don't think we really agree with as a course of action. But I think the response is a bit intense.
Yeah. According to Bonna, a dent in one of the doors and cracks in the rear windshield. He said in the original article a year ago, it will cost about $10,000 to repair. So he claimed that a year ago, and now he's claiming, oh, I had a deal for the car. It's got to be restored. Okay. So if the defendant's lawyer called me and said, we want you to be an expert witness, what would your like rationale be, right, for why this is ridiculous? And I have been an expert witness for this stuff before, so I'm not just blowing smoke of like, oh, I can make up an argument. One, the guy parked his freaking car outside in an alleyway. You can see it in the video. It's in the article. I'm not opposed to driving $500,000 cars on the street. We all do it. It's great. We drive our pride and joys on the street, regardless of their value. But if you have a rare one of 30 all original $500,000 car, especially one that you have an alleged deal pending on, you don't park it in an alley.
Yeah, I thought, see, that was something I didn't actually know. You know, I haven't looked into the current state of this as much. I was just kind of so shocked that something again was happening after a year. I thought this was just his personal car. And that's why he was like, well, this is like irreplaceable. I love this thing, whatever. But if he had a deal on it, then like, bro, why are you parking it there?
Yeah.
You're using a car as a car that isn't your car.
I mean, it was his car, but claims he had a deal on it. So, yeah, that rationale number one, if you really thought the car was that valuable and there was so much value tied up in it being all original, you wouldn't park it in an alley that, according to this article, is mostly owned by you and is... Like, especially if you have an ongoing dispute with your neighbor, like, come on.
Yeah, it's kind of asking for it. Like, which that's not a great reason, but still, like, no, I don't feel like either of these guys is acting in good faith or really correct.
No, no.
This is kind of,
it's absolutely ridiculous. It's a couple of kids just, you know,
playing on the playground. Somebody stomped somebody's sandcastle that they built on the other side of the sandbox and they're upset about it.
Number two. $500,000 is a ridiculous claim. If it's based on the sale, that's really easy to show other sales and just go prove it, right? There's no sale happening for a Nismo 270R for $500,000, right? There's so many better, more significant, cooler JDM cars you can buy for less than that. No way. Not happening. Three, it doesn't cost $500,000 to restore. No way. You can restore a Duesenberg. Well, maybe not a Duesenberg for $500,000, but you can restore far better, cooler, more complex cars for less than $500,000. $200,000-$300,000, you could restore a lot of Porsches. A Nismo 270R, not going to be $500,000. Betcha if you wanted to go hog wild and do all sorts of stuff that didn't need to be done that weren't as a result of these damages, you could spend 150, 200 grand. But how do you convince anybody, jury, whatever, that, oh, because he poured this stuff on the outside of my car, I have to have the engine restored and the chassis and all this other stuff?
Yeah, it seems like a rear window, some, you know, maybe some refinishing of panels because of some dents and then a repaint.
Let's be honest, stickers too. I haven't seen the car. Part of my expert witness would be inspecting the car, but I can almost guarantee you this car was not a 10 out of 10. I've been to Japan. I've seen the cars there. I've seen how they drive quote unquote rare JDM cars. They all get modified. They all get street raced. Not very many people there are super concerned about originality. Their car culture is more towards modifying like
an individuality.
Exactly. Yeah. Bling everywhere. So I bet you this car was probably modified in its previous life. Probably is not original paint. I went to the a Japanese imports place in Virginia and looked over it, not Duncan, but the other one. Every car there had terrible paint work, body work. I mean, it's just the cars coming out of Japan are not typically great, even the quote unquote rare ones. So some inspection, a little bit of research, I would likely make the case, yeah, somebody might prove me wrong. You know, Mark might say, no, this one was the only all original one. But
I don't think it was, though, because all of the articles that are coming out are using photos from the Nissan Museum in Japan of a perfectly pristine black Nismo 270R. The only photos you really see of this one are in this alleyway, but there were some others where it's got like these white aftermarket wheels that are a little too big and like the offset's a little weird, like just different, not weird, just different. So like obviously it was modified. Even if it was just a set of wheels, it's not an all original preservation class example that's going to be on the, you know, the lawn at Pebble in 20 years.
Look at that. I don't even have to do research. My assumptions, I've just gotten so good at the car business that, man, my assumptions are often right. So, this whole thing stinks. I don't like it from either side, right? It sucks that the fire chief did it. if it was a normal firehouse paid position, I would probably call them and say, hey, has he been fired over this? Because he should. And they'd probably say no, because he's union. Well, they wouldn't say that, but that, you know, the fire chief would still have his job because the unions would protect him. But I, like, I'm not with Mark Bonna on this either. Like, $500,000, like, come on. This is a crap that ties up courts when people are trying to get real justice. This is so dumb. It's the dumbest lawsuit ever.
Seriously. Ugh. And it's a year later. Anyway.
Well, yeah. Got to take time to rack up damages, right? He has to go to appointments with his therapist for all this emotional damage. He's got to build up all the bills and stuff like that. So, you know, so he actually has a big fat claim. Time for props and flops of the week.
As always, props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and be sure to mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information online at switchcars.com and come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, what is the pick of the week?
Pick of the week, for the first time in a long time, maybe ever, is not a car we have for sale or own, but it was offered to me by a friend.
That's the whole point.
I know, but it's cool. It's a 1997 Toyota Avalon, the pinnacle of grandpa luxury back in the day. Yep. 110,000 miles, and the seller's only asking $3,500, and it's really not super rusty. This is the car that I think everyone should buy their high school kid, but instead they lease them new Hyundais so that they can learn how to make payments or whatever. It's got backup camera. It's safe. No, mirrors and a good driving school make people safe.
And that's got to be so comfortable. Oh my God. 90s cars like that were so cushy.
Yes.
I had a 2001 Buick Century. That was my, oh my God. There was like a Lazy Boy up front. So
comfortable.
And
they just work. They work. Yeah. They run for freaking ever. Love it.
Love Those Buicks are bad enough that the body will rust away and the engine will keep running.
That's American cars for you. Okay, what's our flop of the week, Tyler?
Flop of the week comes to us from carandriver.com. Racy interiors could look less racy as the EU aims to ban carbon fiber.
For those carbon credits, carbon offsets.
The European Union's parliament wants to add carbon fiber to a list of hazardous materials, which will effectively ban the material starting in 2029. So as far as I can tell, this is just proposed as a part of the EU parliament. I don't really know enough about the politics to know if it will gain traction, but why? I don't. Apparently, carbon fiber filaments that become airborne can be harmful if they come in contact with your skin, but so can so many other things. And I don't know in what way. Like,
I mean, so do the cleaning solutions that we use all the time.
Yeah.
Not direct content, but I can't say anything. Very close proximity. Thank you. That's what I was looking for, to our skin. All the time.
Yeah, like read any label on any cleaning product that you use that isn't just like vinegar and lemon juice, and you feel like your skin's gonna melt off.
Right.
So I don't really, like I said, I don't know if this is going anywhere, but I think it feels like on the surface, just it's a big question mark. Why do we gotta come after the car enthusiasts? Why do we gotta deal with like such a low percentage of vehicles that are on the road that are made of significant carbon fiber? Like, I don't,
it's a big, the automotive industry is a big percentage of carbon fiber users. So it's 20%.
Oh, really?
So it's, yeah.
And what about all the other things that carbon fiber is made out of that are like actually useful? I don't know what they are, but there's gotta be something. There's another 80%.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Maybe this is the lead asbestos of our present. Right,
That's microplastics, bro. That's true.
Honestly, yeah. Why aren't we banning friggin' Coca-Cola bottles and Coca-Cola, for that matter? That's two things far more harmful, in my opinion, than carbon fiber. But you know, got to go after the car industry. All right, our prop of the week, found this cool article sent to me by Mom. Thanks, from WABI TV. Winslow High School in Maine, where I'm from, alumnus fulfills promise made 23 years ago for an inspiring teacher. Over 20 years ago, a Winslow High School student promised one of his teachers an ultimate surprise after he found his success. That promise is now fulfilled. 2002 graduate Matthew Sumner came back to his stomping grounds to buy his teacher, Mark Pelletier, a Volkswagen Karmann Ghia, which was his teacher's dream car. So he surprised him. Sumner has become a global business leader, found his LinkedIn here, managing director of Outbound Investment Group. Lots of big words, corporate and fiduciary providers, intermediary and agent introductions, in market representation. Yeah, sounds like he has definitely made it big time and decided to give back to his teacher. So,
and the Karmann Ghia is green.
Yes, yes. Looks like Irish green to me.
Yeah.
I read this and all I could think of was this is the opposite of Scott's Tots.
Yes.
He came back and he actually made the dream happen in reverse for his teacher instead of the students. But anyway, I just loved it. Nice, heartwarming, feel-good story. And the teacher, Mark Pelletier, says that he plans to do a nice road trip soon with his new Volkswagen.
This has nothing to do with anything, and it probably won't go in the episode, but you mentioned microplastics.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting rid of like all the plastic, like all the Tupperware, all everything. I'm trying to get it out of my
glass.
But you know what started this? The driving force behind this was I have a SodaStream machine. I've had it for a while, and turns out the bottles have an expiration date.
What? Like, the plastic?
The plastic bottles have an expiration date.
I remember you mentioning this.
Guess when my bottle expired.
8 years ago.
July 2014.
Holy shit. Whoa. Ethan, you're full of microplastics,
it turns
bro.
Out. No, so I researched this because I was like, oh, I'm dead in a year, you know? And then I researched it. And WebMD is like, yeah, you are, but for unrelated reasons. Yeah. But it actually turns out the reason it expires is not because of microplastics. You know why?
Is the carbonation.
Yeah, because when you're carbonating the bottle, it's likely to just blow up on you.
Oh, so you'll die from like plastic shrapnel
in
your
eyeballs. Shredded to bits.
Yeah, yeah. Carbon fiber, carbonation, it's all carbon. It's all going to kill you. Where am I supposed to look? Over there. Okay. Thank you, I think, for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders. Sorry, it's small print here on the cheat screen. Produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. Well, speak for yourself. The opinions expressed on the show are exclusively held by the people pontificating and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. God dang lawyers got friggin' get their stuff in, don't they? Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album, I don't know what that means, on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it, there's that word again, in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info. Is that website case sensitive?